Hello everyone and welcome once again to Motos and Friends. This is the weekly podcast brought to you by the editors at Ultimate Motorcycling. My name is Arthur Coldwells. This week, editors Don Williams and Nick DeSena discuss the new Triumph Scrambler. This model uses the 1200 twin engine from the Bonneville range, and it comes in two distinct flavors, the X and the XE. Previous versions of the Scrambler were not very off-road focused. However, Triumph has changed all that. Nick had the opportunity to do a lot of pretty hardcore desert riding in his quest to find out how capable the Scrambler truly is once it goes off pavement. In the second segment this week, I chat with the recently appointed head of MV Agusta North America, Luca Dovesi. Luca started his career with Ducati in Thailand, and he then moved on to KTM Singapore, where he was head of after sales and network development. 3.5 years later, in January 2023, he was brought in by KTM from Singapore to head up the reorganization and re-emergence of MV in the US. As head of the premier brand of Italian performance motorcycles, Luca's energy and enthusiasm came across very clearly as we talked about the progress made so far and what KTM's plans are for the storied Italian mark. So, from all of us here at Ultimate Motorcycling, we hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, this is Don Williams, editor of Ultimate Motorcycling. I'm here with senior editor Nick DeSena, and we're going to talk about the new 2024 Triumph Scrambler 1200 X and XE. They're two siblings. They're not the same, and they've had two different models for a while, and now they're even more different than they were. So, Nick, what's different about them?
Quite a bit this year. I mean, that's sort of the main push for this update. You know, back in 2019, Triumph released its Scrambler 1200 range, which included the XE and XC. Now, they've simplified the naming conventions this year, going from XC to X, and they've retained XE. But the issue we sort of noticed in 2019, and based on purchasing habits from their customers, is that they're seeing something like a 60-40 split between the two bikes. And when you really look at the specs, the pricing, the actual capability between the two models from 2019 to 2023, there's a lot of overlap, we'll say. So in 2024, Triumph sat down, had a bit of a think, as you do, and they said, look, we're going to be able to take these two Scramblers and make them cover a little bit more ground. We want to invite some more people to the platform that may have been, we'll say, restricted from really getting into it just because, you know, they're pretty tall, very leggy, long travel suspension featuring bikes. So to that end, Triumph has come out in 2024 with the Scrambler 1200 XE. And that is the hardcore, absolutely no holds barred Scrambler 1200 as we know and remember it. There's been a couple changes this year in terms of suspension spec. They've gone to a different suspension vendor, and that's allowed them to save a little bit of money here and there. So you're saving some coin at the end of the day, which is nice. And there's a couple little tweaks to the header system, to that 1200cc high power Bonneville engine, the parallel twin, of course. And those are some of the other main tweaks to the XE. But by and large, it's just as we remember it, you know, a full-fledged, just off-road hammering Scrambler that quite honestly will keep a lot of the more hardcore, not to keep hammering that word, middleweight adventure bikes on its toes. Its off-road prowess is pretty serious. Okay, so that is the XE. Now let's talk about what's new with the X. That's going to be a bike that's being a little bit repositioned, right? So what have they done? They've gone ahead and, again, gone to a different suspension supplier. They've also reduced the adjustability features within that suspension. So now we have a non-adjustable Marzocchi fork and spring preload adjustable only Marzocchi shocks. simplified things a little bit. We're also seeing axial mounted calipers come into the mix from Nissan. Those replace the more up-spec Brembo components that we saw before. And the important thing here is that with that suspension change, which is one of the biggest changes that we're seeing to the X platform, the new X platform that we're going to call it for all intents and purposes, is a reduction in suspension travel, dropping things down to 6.7 inches overall. So that lowers your seat height down from well above 33 all the way down to about 32.3 inches on the X model. Now, if you look at the XE, that thing still has a seat height that's well above 34 inches. So when Triumph said that they want to bring more people into the fold, that's a pretty good way to do it. Anyway, long intro, but that's what we're going to be talking about here.
Okay. It seems to me like the Triumph Scrambler 1200 is kind of like a midway point between a dual sport bike and an adventure bike, because it doesn't have, you know, the fairing of an adventure bike, doesn't have a lot of the accoutrements of for travel that an adventure bike has, but it is a lot heavier than any dual sport bike out there, because of course it's a 1200 twin rather than a, let's say, a 650 or 450 single. So how does that play out when you're riding off-road, and how does it play off when you're riding in on-road?
Yeah, so that's actually a really good observation there, and kind of cuts to the quick with both the XE and the X, because their riding experience in terms of the rider triangle and just sitting behind the bars and all of those different aspects is fairly similar. Their capabilities are now far more defined, and we'll get into that later. But, you know, if you think about a traditional dual sport, you know, a single cylinder powered dual sport, let's say, it's going to be very dirt bikey, right? It's not going to be as stable at high speed than your average adventure bike, because it just doesn't have the contact patch. It doesn't have the weight behind it. It doesn't have the weight to encourage that stability. Okay. Now, if you start thinking about an adventure bike, obviously the trade-off is it doesn't have the lightness. It's going to be significantly heavier than a single cylinder powered bike, by and large, you know, when we're talking middleweight and leader class bikes, right? So with something like the Scrambler 1200, despite the fact that it's in this sort of classic vintage, you know, drapings that really, really tap into Triumph's own history, because let's be honest, they're sort of the pioneers of scrambling overall. That's part of the Bonneville culture. What you're getting is something that does sort of split the difference. And one of those things is because it doesn't have all the ADV wind protection. It doesn't have the ADV styled fairings. It's not as big and bulbous. And that's one of the things that when I'm riding the XE, for example, I really enjoy about it, especially riding off-road and maybe technical situations. It does remind me of riding a more dual sport position motorcycle, because you have more vision. I know that's a weird thing to sort of harp on. When you're looking down, you're looking at, you know, okay, I got to go here. I got to plant the front wheel right here. You're in a, say, tight, tricky, rocky section. You know, you just don't have all that mass in front of you. And it kind of frees up the riding experience. Yeah, you're on a naked bike, okay? Because the X and the XE, for all intents and purposes, are naked motorcycles. There's bare none wind protection, we'll say. But when you kind of get down to it, it really does slot itself between them. And, you know, before we get into the performance of everything, yeah, that's kind of how I would phrase it. With the engine, of course, you have a lot more horsepower than a single cylinder bike. You're going to be a lot more, you know, you're going to be feeling a lot more confident on the freeway or just traveling at freeway speeds for an extended period of time. But of course, yeah, you don't have those ADV accoutrements. You don't have the wind protection, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That said, kind of the charm of scrambling was taking a street bike and making it go off road. So a little bit of the old, you know, making the wrong tool right for the job, to put a twist on that old phrase. And that's sort of the charm of scrambling for me. So yeah, you got to take it on the chin a little bit more in terms of wind protection and things like that. But at the end of the day, it's a pretty unique experience within the overall landscape of motorcycling right now.
Okay. So what kind of conditions did you test the X and the XE in?
So let's kind of lay down the ground terrain that we were in first. We're stationed out of Borrego Springs, California, which you know quite well. You're parked alongside the Anza Borrego Desert State Park, if I remember that's the actual name of it. Anyway, Anza Borrego Desert is right. That's your back door when you're in that city. And then you also have Ocotillo Wells SVRA. So, you know, what is the term for the places that we can ride legally, Don?
Yeah, the SVRA is a state vehicle recreation area.
Yes.
So people can ride dirt bikes there, side-by-sides, you know, pretty much whatever you want. You got a tank, you can go for a cruise in your tank.
Yeah. If you had one, by all means. As long as it has a license plate, good to go. So
then it doesn't even need a license plate in a lot of the state vehicle recreation areas.
Yeah. So, you know, conditions, pretty average for the winter, we'll say. A bit chilly. We got some rain, got some clear stuff. But look, when you're riding off road, that's kind of, I don't know, you take it on the chin. You just got to deal with it, right? And in some cases, the wet sort of helped the dirt. It packs things in a little bit. Now that said, we did some street riding. We went up Montezuma Grade S22, went up towards, what is that, 74, towards Julian, California. Not quite to Julian, but we did explore some of those roads. So we did quite a bit of asphalt riding. Then we did a lot of off-road riding. I mean, almost 50-50. And the off-road riding overall is fairly intense. I mean, you and I both know we've been on press launches where you kind of get the bunny trail treatment for its off-road component. But in this case, you've been to Ocotillo Wells. You know that area pretty extensively. You've done it countless times over the years. And yeah, it's got a little bit of everything. You get your big sand washes, you get rocky stuff, you get, there's an actual name for this area, but basically just, you know, carved out into the hillsides, these sort of loamy sand slalom course that where you could like really keep your speed up. And honestly, that was incredibly sick. And then there's Jeep trails and two track, and yeah, it was awesome. So if anyone's familiar with desert riding in California, we essentially got a taste for every single bit of it. And yeah, I guess that sort of segues us into, well, how'd it do?
Well, first, one thing I want to know, did they run stock tires on these bikes, or did they put more knobby tires to reflect the fact they'd be going off road more?
Yeah. Okay. So good point there.
I think one was the Michelin Anarchy Wild.
Yes. So that is the OE approved tire option for both of these bikes. Again, these are running 21 inch and 17 inch tubeless wire spoke wheels from the factory. On the dealership floor, you're going to find Metzler Karoo Street tires. In my opinion, I think they call them like 80-20s. I would say 95-5s. It's a street tire. Street is in the name. I'm not being mean by saying that. It's a road tire.
Yeah, I mean, we know that so much of performance off-road is tire-based, almost as much as MotoGP. I mean, we've seen the videos of the guys in the GSXR 1000Rs with knobbies riding around in the dirt. So definitely good tires help. So how did the tires do? How did the bikes do? What kind of confidence did that give you to have those tires on there instead of the stockers?
Yeah, so moving into that, and Triumph knew that we were going to be doing some pretty serious off-roading for all intents and purposes. I would say that I was challenged as a rider and, you know, had a good time. And there's that threshold, you know, you go from challenging and fun to challenging and, oh my God, I never want to come back to this place ever again. And, you know, those purposes, we'll say, we went with the OE approved Michelin Anarchy Wild Knobby. Now there are Michelin Anarchy tires, without the wild, you know, modifier on there. And those are street tires. The wild is an important thing because it's a pretty aggressive knobby. So we rode those on the street. You know, we changed pressures up and down depending on where we were. And on road, you sacrifice a little bit of stability just because you're dealing with some pretty squirmy knobbies. And that's an observation that you can apply to any aggressive off-road tire. Was it a big compromise? No. I mean, we ripped up and down Montezuma Grade, which is just outside Borrego Springs, California. I was perfectly happy with them, even at lower PSIs. You know, you can definitely feel them moving around a little bit more, but that's just par for the course when riding, you know, an off-road oriented tire. Michelin calls it a 50-50. I would say that is a real fair assessment. And yeah, that's what you can expect. So off-road performance is always dictated by your tire in a lot of ways. I would say above all else, you could get away with a lot of things, but if you have a bad tire off-road, you're going to have a real not fun time. There's another word for that, but we'll keep it PG. Yeah, those things hook up excellently. Good front end feel. They track really well in soft stuff too. So unless you're really hitting some muddy, like super wet, muddy, just snotty, slick material, these things work. I've on a bigger bike like this, you know, the XE weighs 507 pounds. The X is 503 pounds. You're pushing a lot of weight, especially when you're braking and then you're getting the bike turned, saying you're trying to load that mass into a berm or, you know, into a rut or something like that and gain some traction. These things hook up. So that's where we're at on tires.
Okay. I mean, it's worth noting for people who aren't necessarily familiar with different weights. The 500 pound weight is kind of halfway between the 600 pounds that we often see on an adventure bike and the 300 pounds that we're looking at on a dual sport bike. It's kind of sitting there, you know, more towards the adventure end of it. So, you know, imagine me riding a CRF 450 RL with a 200 pound passenger. So you've got a lot more power. You've got the 1200 cc motor.
Yeah. So with the engine, there's a couple little tweaks this year. It's producing 89 horsepower, 81 foot pounds torque. That's a healthy torque figure. Like Don mentioned before, this is not a screamer engine. It revs predictably. It really leans into that buzzword you hear in reviews called, or that we use often, known as tractable. So you can understand what's going on beneath your backside, we'll say. Now, of the changes this year that they've done, really it's aimed at passing emissions compliance, things like that. So you know, updated fuel map, the header is a little bit more freer flowing. It also has a larger 50 millimeter single throttle body, replacing the smaller diameter dual units. Things like that. Those are the only hard parts that are changed. And this engine has been updated, you know, multiple times over since its introduction in 2016. And the thing is still awesome. Now, helping you control all of that is a full suite of IMU-aided electronics. The XE always had that. The X gained it for this model year. Now, when we talk about ride modes, the thing to kind of understand is Triumph and a couple other brands have really cracked the code on ride-by-wire fueling. Whether you're in the preset rain, road, sport, or off-road modes, whether you're on the X or the XE, the fueling is spot on. Very good throttle response. Rain and road are somewhat self-explanatory. They're the tamest modes of the bunch, so the nannies are cranked up to their max. Sport, pretty self-explanatory too. You know, that's nannies are cranked down and throttle response is cranked up. Off-road isn't entirely clear. And what it does is it offers the most smoothing on the initial crack of throttle. Because when you're getting bounced around on the trail, that really helps. It helps you not do those small moments of whiskey throttle. Because imagine using like a superbike map in a super tight technical trials-esque situation. And I'm just going to be honest, I think that would suck. Now you do have TC, adjustable TC on either bike. And then of course you have off-road ABS as well. It goes to a front only ABS on both bikes. And it is not defeatable on the X, but traction control is. Of course, with the XE, you have the off-road pro mode that disables everything right off the top. Boom, it's done. And now you have a 100% raw bike. For me, I would say putting the thing in off-road and just going to town is the way to go. So here's the thing. Because of my confidence off-road, I actually go into the customizable rider mode and turn off traction control, but keep front only ABS on unless it's a downhill descent, like something really sandy or rocky. Because typically the front only ABS, whether it's on the Triumph or the clear majority of other bikes that have off-road ABS systems, that's reductive or redundant, off-road ABS settings. When you're in those loose downhill situations, it can trigger the front ABS and you get this free rolling situation. So unless you're doing some like descents and things like that, I typically keep front only ABS on just as a safety net. And that's me personally, but on a bike like this, the super tractable engine, I kill TC because you can control the thing. It's not just completely wild. And it's not a leveled traction control, as in like KTMs often use like level 1 through 9 or something like that. And they call it slip control. In this case, it's an off-road TC setting or it's off. You know, it's a sport TC setting or it's something else. But yeah, it's a little conservative. But for those getting their feet wet, especially say an X owner that wants to go off-road, then they have the electronics that can help them understand, you know, traction loss. They can have a safety net, so if they grab the front brake too hard, they're not just going to tuck the front and, you know, make it all go south. And for an X buyer, I think the electronics are a pretty big selling point. Now you can't kill ABS completely on the X, but you know, for that buyer, someone that's only going to dabble in hitting the trail every now and again, it's probably not the worst thing in the world. For the XE owner, that's where the model exclusive off-road pro comes in, and it just kills everything. So hence the name pro. Well, you should be an advanced rider if you're using that.
So let's take them one at a time. Where did the XE excel off-road, and where did it have problems?
So it basically did well where we anticipated it would do well. And that's with the fact that it's got a lot more suspension travel than a lot of motorcycles on the market. Again, when I said that the XE can basically put up a good fight with a lot of the middleweight hardcore adventure motorcycles. So think your 890 Adventure Rs, you know, your Ducati Desert Xs, things of that nature. And the reason I'm saying middleweight specifically instead of heavyweight, and not going heavyweight because of this bike's displacement, because it is 1200cc, is because of the power output that these bikes make. So it makes 89 horsepower and 81 foot-pounds of torque, right on par, or in the realm, we'll say, with the other modern classic leader class motorcycles. But really, that's more in a middleweight mindset for me, or at least middleweight performance for me. Whereas you look at your KTM Super Adventures, your BMW 1300 GSs, et cetera, those make a lot more than 100 horsepower, I think.
Well, while it's down in horsepower, it makes a lot of torque. I mean, that Bonneville engine, basically on the Bonnevilles, is something more like a cruiser engine, very low revving, very torque heavy, and not about high-end performance. And that actually makes sense for a motorcycle like this off-road. You're not going to be running it at 8,000 or 9,000 RPM wide open. It just doesn't have the chassis for that. So it makes more sense to have a slower revving, torquey, grunty motor that will always have power no matter how low you let it, the revs drop.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the joys about both bikes, because the engines are copy and paste job between them, is you can lean into that torque. And because it's so friendly, it has that inherent user friendliness that we see in the Bonnevilles. You're able to understand traction as you're rolling on power and really bite into what you're riding on. So whether it's something loose or rocky, or it is that perfect chocolate cake dirt, you know, something that's got some moisture in it, the fact that it doesn't spin up with just sheer aggression allows you to wrap your head around traction. Okay. So that's a big, big factor for me. And yeah, it doesn't have the horsepower numbers of, you know, some other leader class motorcycle, but it's not supposed to be. It's a parallel twin engine. It's not, it's a cruiser-esque parallel twin engine. It's not going to do the same thing. Okay. But what you asked about was, where do they really take different paths? And the XCs, it almost has 10 inches of suspension travel. If you want the actual true number, it's 9.8 inches or something like that out of the fully adjustable Marzocchi stuff. And is there a difference between the Marzocchi and the Ohlins? I would need to do a true back-to-back comparison. There probably is in some capacity. The valving's probably different because it's obviously not the same brand. But man, just like we did in 2019, I was pretty blown away with how this thing handles off-road. It just absolutely takes things on the chin like a prize fighter. You can just charge through anything. And the forgiveness in the sense that you can do that is a bit hilarious. So for someone of my off-road riding ability, you know, I'm definitely not a six-time outdoor and supercross champ, Jeff Stanton, who happens to be one of the brand ambassadors for Triumph. Definitely not up to his level, but you know, you're talking about a 500-pound bike that can slam through a lot of things, and that suspension just absolutely eats it. So, you know, the first question is, well, did you ever bottom the bike out? I think maybe once when I hit something going about 50 miles an hour that I shouldn't have hit, and everything was okay. So that was fine. But how the chassis loads, you know, it has enough hold up and also that give to it to where you can load the chassis, use the engine, create grip, and actually power out of situations. Likewise, you can load the front end and just let the front end bite and have it track through a corner nicely. And, you know, that might sound like I'm overselling my off-road ability. Not, I consider myself a pretty middling person in that regard, but I can get the job done. Another kind of a model specific change for the XC is it opts for a longer swing arm overall. So it's something like 1.25 inches longer in comparison to the X. So it's got a super wide wheelbase. I mean, we're talking 61.8 inches and that's pretty hefty overall. But yeah, there's just nothing that I could do that would really phase the XC. But even in that same breath, there are some drawbacks, right? Because it's tall, super tall. So when you get into sand, that low speed stuff, well, then you got to consider its weight. Suddenly that weight comes back in a hurry. So that's definitely something that you can apply to basically every adventure bike, especially things as they keep getting heavier and heavier and heavier, as you get into the leader class stuff. Then it can get pretty top heavy. But yeah, those are the only sort of downsides to running a bike this tall. That said, you need ground clearance. You need the suspension travel. So when you've got some momentum behind you, the thing is not going to be phased by anything that I could deal with it. So, or deal at it, we'll say. But yeah.
So the XE has a 21-inch front wheel. Yeah, I've always wondered about that on a bike that heavy. I've kind of found that a fat 19 inch works in the, certainly in the sand, far better than the knifey 21 inch. Now, and it also provides more cushion when you hit rocks and stuff, which you're going to do more on a 500 pound adventure slash dual sport slash scrambler bike, because you can't, you know, wheelie over every rock that you come upon. And it's interesting that they still stick with that 21 inch to me. You know, it keeps the steering lighter, but it's, there's disadvantages to it in the sand. And that's kind of the kryptonite of all these big, heavy, scrambler venture bikes. And it does, a 21 inch doesn't work as well on the street. So that's always been kind of an oddball choice for me for those bikes. It's almost like they're kind of giving into style. Like they want the bike to look more off-roady. So it's like, oh yeah, we got to have an 18 inch rear and a 21 inch front. You know, there's kind of a negative attitude about having a 17-19 combo, because people will say, well, that's not serious off-road, even though you're talking about a 500 pound motorcycle with 1200 cc engine, which to me isn't also serious off-road.
Oh yeah.
With the big difference is the suspension between the two bikes. You have long travel suspension on the XE, you have medium travel suspension, maybe even short on the X, though not as short as an authentic old school scrambler, which was in the 3 and 4 inch travel category. So are there places where you would rather ride off-road the X than the XE?
Interestingly, yes. And it's kind of what you were hinting at before with sand performance. Because of the lower center of gravity and the fact that the bike is just lower overall, it makes weight management and dealing with the heft of a bike of that size easier. There's really no other way to put it. When you get into the soft stuff, especially at low speed, and not especially, but particularly at low speed, being able to negotiate the X's size versus the XE, dab a foot, you know, pick the bike up, you know, with your foot and the throttle simultaneously, things like that are just that much easier, because you're not dealing with a seat height that's over 34 inches. On the XE, it's 34.25 inches. There is an accessory low seat that'll drop it down to 33.26. I didn't have time to try it. I'm not sure if we had any at that event. But typically with lower seats too, they're really shaving away a lot of padding too. So you're kind of losing a little bit of comfort.
It's not just that with a low seat. The problem with the low seat solution to me is that what it does is, it relative to the seat, it raises the pegs and raises the handlebars. So you're not just like lowering the seat, you're actually dramatically changing the ergonomics of the bike. So if you want a lower seat, they offer a lower seat bike, and you're better off doing that than because a short rider doesn't really need to, you know, to raise the handlebar, you know. So I think they do that for probably for people who don't ride off road but still want the XE look.
Yeah, you know, there's an argument for it, but at the same time, you're 100% right, because it's like changing one aspect of the ergonomics and then failing to realize that, well, it's a rider triangle. There's 3 points, right? So if you affect one, it's going to affect the other in some way. And that may be good, that may be bad, depending on your dimensions. Now with the Scrambler X in stock trim, that's a 32.28 inch, or basically 32 and a quarter inch seat height. Okay, so it's not the tallest thing in the world. And because of the parallel twin packaging, these bikes are relatively narrow. It's pretty manageable for someone of my size. I'm 5'10" tall, 32 inch inseam. Okay. So the X does really edge out a win when it comes to that super low speed, tricky, soft, you know, pretty gnarly terrain, honestly, for any heavier bike, you know, whether it's a middleweight adventure bike or a leader class adventure bike or a scrambler. So yeah, it can definitely handle a little bit better. Now taking it to the street, that's another thing where the X definitely edges out a small victory, in the sense that, again, its lower center of gravity really encourages this planted feel that may not be present in the XE because it is much higher. So it's a little bit more susceptible to becoming a little bit more wiggly feeling when you're transitioning left to right aggressively. That said, I kind of like that and it's super fun for me, but for other people, they might not dig that aspect. That's sort of inherent to all tall motorcycles. They're just a little bit more gangly feeling. Whereas the X really starts to shine as the scrambler that can scramble in an extremely authentic way. But quite honestly, if you're buying the bike for the looks and all you care about is riding on the street, blah, 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 well, the X is the better argument, in my opinion, right? Because it just has more stability on the road, even though it has a 21-inch, 17-inch wheel combo, even though it can actually go off-road in a meaningful way, and the XE takes the off-road performance even further to a pretty extreme degree. Those are the advantages between the two, kind of in a nutshell.
Right. So, you know, looking at this, who is the target audience for each bike?
That's a tough question. Because there are a couple little things to sort of hit on between the two. You know, there were price drops with the bikes, obviously. With the XE, it dropped $900, while the X dropped $1,150. Obviously, that's for, or we can attribute that to swapping out vendors, going from the Showa Olens combo that was on the previous bikes to a Marzocchi suspension supplier. So just changing vendors right off the top, going to a different guy, that's saved a bit of coin there. The X went to an axial mounted Nissan caliper setup, two piston instead of four piston Brembos. So we're going to a lower spec there. Okay, cool. The X also uses a different dash. It's just kind of a round LCD TFT combo dash instead of the more fancy full color TFT display that's on the XE. Saves a little bit of money there. Okay, cool. But who are these bikes for? Like I mentioned before, if you want like kind of the most authentic representation of a scrambler we have today, it would be the Scrambler 1200X, because it can go off-road and do so quite capably. I mean, the X did all of the same things the XE did during this press event. It may have made you work a little bit harder in certain situations, you know, especially the rocky stuff, the lesser travel got beat up a little bit there. But when you were in the softer stuff, or say someone had a little mishap, well, it was easier to recover from on that thing. So there you go. And then on the street, yeah, it has a clear advantage. It just has a different personality. Now the XE, that's going to be for your more hardcore rider or just someone that absolutely loves the look of it, which would be me, because I look at that thing and I just go, yeah, that's cool. I can't say anything else about it in terms of mushiness and just, you know, whinging about its looks. That thing is just awesome to me. I don't care if it ever goes off-road. That said, you're sort of squandering the opportunity to just absolutely shame some people on that thing, because it has actual off-road performance with looks. So it's that pairing of style and substance, which we rarely get in the motorcycle world. Things are pretty cut and dry. You can either have something that does and then doesn't necessarily look the coolest thing on the planet, or it looks like the raddest thing on the planet and then does not do the thing it's supposed to look like it's doing. So that's kind of that. I'm not sure if that answered the question, but there we go.
No, that did good. The one thing I would wonder about riding the XE off-road in a hardcore way, and I'm tough, is how much does that gas tank cost if you dent it?
Probably a lot, but I also have a lot of respect for people that are going to take that bike and absolutely send the thing. So just as an anecdotal thing, there's a blue it's a launch edition bike, or not a launch edition, but for, it's from the 2019 model year, where it's got the blue tank that it launched with a black stripe on it. There's a guy out, and I see him in Malibu all the time, and his bike is hammered and it's awesome. And that guy is my hero.
He has the real patina on the bike.
Oh yeah, that is like battle earned patina. And that's awesome. We also have some colleagues, a colleague named Steve Camrad. He's sort of a perennial freelancer. He works for, you know, ADV Pulse and a couple other publications now and again. He owns one and he races his. So yeah, you're going to get those guys that are the 1%. I'd say Steve and the Malibu guy are definitely in there. And then you're going to get guys that are just buying it because it looks cool. And to be honest, that's like half of a man's decision-making, man or woman's decision-making when it comes to buying cars and bikes at this point. So I can't really blame you, you know? So that's kind of where we're at on that one.
Yeah, I would say at least half. You know, I mean, you want a motorcycle, and you're buying a motorcycle because it's something that's fun and something that you love and something that you care about. It's not just like something you're going to drive to work and back. Although there are a few bikes like that. Most people in the United States don't commute on them. So yeah, you want something that's going to stir your, you know, inner feelings and make you excited that you have the bike and feel like wherever you go, people look at it and go, ah, that guy has a cool bike. And then in reflective coolness lands on you. So yeah, that's a totally legit reason to buy a scrambler or any other kind of motorcycle that works for your personality.
Yeah. Yeah. And it definitely falls under the whole look good, feel good thing. So kind of one of the last things to touch on between the bikes, the major differences here, because there are a couple other things, but look, in this conversation, we'll just hit the high points. Okay. So the 1200 XE gets an upgrade in terms of the brake calipers. It now has Brembo Stylemas. Cool. If you're familiar with any high-end sport bike on the market, I guarantee you it has those. Now, there is a slight downgrade in terms of the master cylinder because it used to have a Brembo ratio and span adjustable MCS master cylinder. So you could actually change the ratio of the master cylinder just by rolling this little clicker. It's an awesome, awesome master cylinder. That said, they still went with a high-quality Brembo master cylinder. So as you guys would expect, there's great feel, great power, nothing to complain about there. In fact, it's probably overkill for an off-road bike. Like, you just don't need, you know, super bike levels of braking performance in a lot of ways. But if you're going to go to the coffee shop and brag about stuff, you need that. So good on Triumph. Now with the X, to save money, they've gone with the two-piston Nissan calipers and a 310 set of rotors up in the front. Feel between them, there's going to be some differences. You're going to need to pull at the lever a little bit harder and feel isn't quite up to snuff. But that said, even though it's a quote-unquote down-spec component, these calipers have been around forever. They're tried and true. They're not going to, you know, jam you up at all. And they work. They also stop a 500-pound bike off-road pretty handily. And there is an argument for taking the edge off when you're in low-grip situations. So, you know, that's what it is. That and changes like that are saving you a lot of money at the till. Anyway, that long discussion is the 2024 Triumph Scrambler 1200 X and XE in a sizable nutshell, we'll say. You know, there's some differences between them. Triumph has really gone out of their way to create clear distinctions between these models and make them serve different riders. Because before, they just had a couple little, you know, spec sheet differences, and you could really go either way. And now there's actually something to chew on there. So in my opinion, the X definitely leans into the more street riders among us, someone that wants something stylish, that wants an authentic scrambler, and can actually go off-road in earnest. Because let's be honest here, the only thing in the scrambler class that's going to outclass the 1200X is the 1200XE, which is essentially just a hardcore naked ADV bike. And that thing is awesome. Like, that is genuinely one of my favorite bikes in the past few years. And it's just because it has serious off-road potential and still rides really well on the street. You know, the thing still, you can rip it around on the road and have a lot of fun. And they both look awesome. So at the end of the day, yeah, Triumph has a bit of a monopoly in the scrambler class because, well, how could they not? Let's be honest. They kind of invented this thing. So that's where we're at.
That's an excellent putting together of the two bikes. And thank you very much, Nick. And we will talk again later about motorcycles of all things.
We will.
In the second segment this week, I chat with the recently appointed head of Enviagusta North America, Luca Davesi. Luca started his career with Ducati in Thailand, and he then moved on to KTM Singapore, where he was head of after sales and network development. 3.5 years later, in January 2023, he was brought in by KTM from Singapore to head up the reorganization and re-emergence of MV in the US. As head of the premier brand of Italian performance motorcycles, Luca's energy and enthusiasm came across very clearly as we talked about the progress made so far and what KTM's plans are for the storied Italian mark.
I started my adventure in the motorcycle business right after my university. I completed my master in Bologna, in Italy. And right after, Ducati Motor Company offered me a possibility to become a quality engineer for the factory that Ducati had in Thailand. So I moved in Thailand, and it was a big jump for me. I didn't know anybody. I've never been in Asia before. But I'm really glad to the company and to that choice because I met amazing people and I learned a lot. After that, the KTM company gave me the opportunity to move. After 4 years in Singapore, working closer with the customer service, parts, accessories, and network development business, when we start the conversation of acquiring Enviagusta, I mean, all the team was super excited because in Singapore, it was like having a little Italy. We had eight co-workers that were from Italy. And that's why I'm here. I moved here March last year after months of back and forth between Singapore, Italy, and USA. And I'm super excited. And we've done a lot in 1 year. As you can imagine, when you start the acquisition of a brand, especially in a big corporate like KTM, there are a lot of pieces of the puzzle that you need to fix, whether it's operations, IT, services, people, organization. So it took a while for us to be ready to do the business with the new brand Enviagusta inside the KTM umbrella.
Well, that's very interesting. So actually you come from an engineering background.
Yes. I've studied industrial engineering, which is basically a mix between technical processes and organizational processes. They teach you how to look at the business and every single department and with efficiency and cost efficiency approach.
What was it attracted you to Enviagusta really to feel that you could bring to this?
You know, when you are in Italy, when you're a kid, you want to play with motorcycles. You don't want to play. I mean, there were no iPad, iPhones or anything back in the days. And if you had a motorcycle, you were a cool kid. So, of course, that's what everybody were aspiring to, you know. And growing up in Bologna, of course, for me, I had the chance to touch firsthand all the Ducati products, especially because that's where most of the people buy down there. And Enviagusta for all of us was always that beautiful, the most beautiful design motorcycles that nobody could touch even or see or for sure nevertheless buy. So basically it was a really aspirational product for me. When you grow up, you feel like you're made in Italy. You want to contribute to grow up the made in Italy. And Enviagusta was the perfect brand for doing so with, thankfully to this big corporate of KTM that is enabling the brand to, you know, become much more, because MV Agusta has been damaged in the past. And there is not a better adventure than the one that you take something that is not working, that needs to be fixed, and you take proud of it. It's made in your country, and then you want to make it successful. So for me, that's what drive my passion even more on a daily business, you know, having something that is made in Italy that a lot of people, more than 200 people in Italy, are counting on us to you know, to continue to work at the brand, at the company, at the factory. And this is what drives me every day. And I think being Italian, especially abroad, you have a lot of, you can really transmit without any filter everything that happened in the factory, the passion that the workers put in building this product by hand, and then delivering that to the final consumer. This is our role here, making sure that the emotion that is created far, far away arrive at the same level to the final customer and our dealers as well.
Was the situation in America what you were expecting, or was it better or worse?
good question. So unfortunately, I have to be honest, and the situation was pretty messy when we arrived here. So honestly, everybody thought it would have been easier. But after the first months, we assessed the network and the operations. We immediately realized that we needed to inject more resources, more investment, because the situation was needed a bigger approach and a more structured approach. And yeah, of course, I don't hide that. I wish it would have been easier. But at the end of the day, these challenges makes me even work with more motivation. So here we are. Back in a year and a half ago, the network was scattered. Contract were not the right one. The dealer were not treated all the same. Customer, nobody was talking to customer. Nobody was making visits. There was very few marketing activity at the regional level. So yes, the situation was bad. But the good thing is that everybody we talk to, they always appreciate the product and the design, because that never stop developing and innovating in Italy, which, if you may, it's one of the most important things. Because if we would also have to put hands hardly in the product, that it would be even more difficult. But only thing we had to do is making sure that the distribution works smooth.
I think it's very critically important that MV Agusta stays Italian with that incredible Italian design and the look and the feel of MV Agusta that makes them so beautiful and work so well. Is that going to stay the same? It's going to stay the Italianness of MV Agusta?
Absolutely. So the role of, myself and our counterparts in Italy is making sure that the integration between KTM and this brand is taking advantage of the best core activities that KTM has, such as distribution, you know, IT, warehouses, and taking advantage of those. So completely rely on KTM on everything that is not core for MV Agusta. So design, productions, strategic marketing, R&D, everything will remain in Italy. As a proof of that, KTM is investing a lot in people. We keep hiring a lot of people that are based in Varese City, which is where MV Agusta is producing. And also in the future, we will going forward with more investment in the structure, so in the facility in Italy. So everybody, especially Mr. Stefan Peter, our owner, it's super aligned on keeping the brand exclusive and Italian. Of course, every non-core activity that KTM can absorb and support the brand, it's perfect if we can hand over, such as subsidiary management, logistic parts, IT system, everything that is not core to the brand, but it will make the back end so much better, because KTM, this is something that they can do very, very, very good, is managing every back end of any situation in the proper way in the business. So to answer your question, yes.
When I visited MV Agusta about this time last year, they were in the process of building a second production line. Is that now online, and is that going to make a difference to you know, future product?
Yes. So the production line that you mentioned was ready in November last year. We did the grand opening right before ECMA. And the production line is dedicated only to three-cylinder. So before, the production line was mixed, four and three-cylinder. Right now, the production line that you're talking to, it's all focused on three-cylinder, which give us a couple of more more structured approach on the quality control and on the takt time in the production line to focus on three-cylinder only in that area. The old production line is dedicated now to four-cylinder only. What happened is that thanks to that, we are able to increase capacity of production. Our goal is very clear. We were underproducing for what the global market would like to ask, you know, for the demand. So with that production line, now we are able in the next couple of years to fulfill the demand that the market had of this luxury product. But again, as all of our strategy is quality versus quantity, at one day we will stop because the capability of the production, the two production lines are very small. It's a small capability. So one day we'll reach that cap, and then we'll start focusing on higher end product and more experience around the product rather than the product itself. Because at the end of the day, our goal, as many of the luxury manufacturers, is keeping the supply one unit less than the demand, right?
Yes. So I think it was Enzo Ferrari that was originated that statement. He said, you want to build one less than the market demands.
And he was, and he is, he's still right.
He is still right. Envy Agusta, apart from just the sheer looks of the motorcycles, they've always been known for, you know, innovation and development. The first thing that really jumps to mind is the radial valve technology that really is not done by anybody else, and it helps the engines breathe that much better and helps the performance. So is Envy Agusta really, is KTM investing in Envy Agusta developments to really help these kind of innovations come along?
So let me try to wrap my idea around, because there are a lot of things going on, thankfully. Let's start by saying that since we started the acquisition of the brand, immediately we created an R&D committee where the two companies come together every month, more or less, and they share innovation and technology idea for the future. So KTM is a very advanced company on a certain level, and then Envy Agusta is on something else, perhaps. So what the committee group is doing is making sure that the knowledge is shared. Because perhaps Envy Agusta, as you mentioned, in the three and the four cylinder, they have technology that nobody had in the market, whether it's the radial valves or the counter-rotating crankshaft on the three-cylinder. And also the infotainment and the app that we develop with Envy Agusta, it's really, really forward for the motorcycle business. So, but on the other side, KTM has technology in whether it's the diagnostic or the electronics that maybe Envy Agusta could integrate it. So for now, everything that is going on is at the committee level, and it's due to helping each other and just pushing more further the innovations. Engine and chassis, as you may imagine, they are very different between a KTM product and Envy Agusta. You know, KTM is developing one and two cylinders, Envy Agusta is developing three and four. The chassis is completely different. So we don't see many crossover. And if anything, KTM is now trying to understand how they can support, especially the testing activity. Because back in the day, Envy Agusta had a lot of issue on time to market. So you build a very beautiful prototype, so then you start with the Avant series, and then you need to test, you know, components, where is wheels, frames, stress test, etc. But if a company is small, it's also small the opportunity and the high cost of renting facilities an external laboratory for approving or certificate or testing the parts. So that's what KTM since last year is helping a lot, making available these testing facilities to MV Agusta, supporting the efficiency process of the R&D. So we can go to the market with a higher quality product, better tested, and in a shorter period of time. This is the first big integration that, at least from my perspective, I'm not an R&D head of R&D, so for sure they could tell you more, but on my eyes, this is what I'm seeing on a monthly basis, and it's helping a lot. The first project we collaborate together was the LAXP 9.5, the new Eddie Orioli version, brand new adventure bike for MV Agusta, the first of its kind, brand new engine. This is our new three-cylinder engine. So KTM, especially, I can talk about also KTM North America, because back in last summer, we support the final stages of endurance and stress test of their adventure bike. Because as you can imagine, our tester here in the facility in California, they know how to ride off-road. They are the best in the market. So the engineers here help us to the final stages of the development. So that's where the integration comes. But again, every innovation regarding the brand is in fact in Italy. Well, technically, Arthur, not in Italy, but in San Marino. It's a state within a state. That's where our research center is. It's almost by the coast, the east coast of Italy.
Yes, Misano is in San Marino.
Yes, Misano is near San Marino, correct.
That brings me to the obvious point. MV Agusta is one of the winningest brands of all time in motorcycle racing. KTM's brand slogan is ready to race. I realize you're already in World Supersport, but is there going to be more than that?
Well, of course, you can imagine that it's not me, the person that I should answer to this question. However, you said yourself that KTM is a ready to race brand, and this philosophy, this approach expand to every brand that we have in the portfolio. So that's my answer. You can expect great things and great support from KTM on every level, which might also include competition at some point.
Fantastic. I love it. We need more world championships, more than 37. Where's that 38th coming from?
Yes, it will be a dream to see such an historical brand to be back on the biggest class. Right now, all the company and all the people is heavily focused on making sure that everybody worldwide has the right access to our product. This is our priority, making sure that the people start to fall in love again with the brand. They can rely on it. They can touch it. They can buy it. This is our first priority. Of course, aside of that, the level of support that KTM is giving us has no limits. It's just a matter of when is the right timing for that.
The dealer network was obviously at some level, they didn't have the resources they needed. And at another level, the dealer network in the US really wasn't up to what was needed. Do you have plans to expand the dealer network and to support the dealers more so that the public can have confidence in buying the MV Agusta product?
Yes, of course. The effort that we did all every day last year was to rebuild the network. This was my first priority every time. You know, I wake up in the morning and I'm like, okay, who's our new partner? So we did a lot of groundwork last year, a lot of visits, and we rebuild the network with new and old partners that still believe in the brand. However, we are still halfway. So right now you can see around 20 dealers in USA, 7 in Canada and 1 in Mexico. But you can expect this number to be double by the end of this year. This is where we will be. Yes. Again, it's not if you look at the absolute value, it's not a big network. But again, as an exclusive product, we don't want to be everywhere. And especially we want to to do business with the right partners that believe in the brand and share our same passion for it. So we are very picky on choosing the right partners, but also our dealers, they also have to be very picky and demand a lot from us because it must be a dual relationship. So to your question, today, the network is halfway where we want to be, but is already giving us a lot. And the customer across US and Canada for us, we are still open, but I could name many, many more. So that's the goal. We know what we have to do. And that's why we are on the road a lot, our team, to talk and meet with the industry partners.
That's really good news. That is really good news. I think if there's a company that can actually pull this off and give the American public confidence, I think it is Pyra Mobility Group. Really, it's the power that group brings to the MV Agusta brand is gives everybody a lot of confidence.
Yep.
Is there anything else that I haven't asked that you would like to tell us?
I think we touched a lot of nice points today, and I'm really glad, Arthur, that you called me for having this chat. I really appreciate that. Every time that I had the chance to talk about our Italian brand, it gives me even more motivational to wake up in the morning and go out there and make some good decision out there. And I think at the end of the day, that's what we as a KTM group, but especially myself with this Italian brand, are trying to do is reignite the passion at any level for motorcycling. Because we feel that new generations are, they need a reason and some motivation also for looking forward to spend and invest some money in a motorbike, whether it's an Italian or any motorbike. But this is our goal. As a brand ambassador of the industry, we need to reach more people as possible. And the new generations, they don't come from heritage and they don't know the brand maybe. So what we have to do is to share them our passion and our emotion and make sure they understand and they want to be part of the family. That's the only way we can be profitable in the future, if we start to build and cultivate the early generations. So anytime I have the chance to talk about this, I'm glad. So thanks again, Arthur, for this time.
Well, thank you very much, Luca. Your enthusiasm and your energy are a breath of fresh air. So it's great talking to you. Thank you very much for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Thanks to you, Arthur.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.